Hello, everybody. Today is Wednesday, April 17th. I'm Bill Murphy here with the Front Pages. I will be reading from the New York Times and the Hartford Courant. And we will take a look at the main pictures on each paper front page. On the main page, first page of the New York Times, there are pictures of bridges in America. I'm going to read the caption, then tell you which bridges are pictured here. The caption says, "The collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore has prompted a reassessment on critical bridges around the country that may be similarly vulnerable to a ship strike." We're going to have a story. That'll be my first story. And the bridges that are listed, and it's just a picture of the bridges, Ben Franklin Bridge in Pennsylvania, also New Jersey, connects the two. The Memphis, Arkansas Bridge, the Mid-Hudson Bridge, that's in New York, the Lewis and Clark Bridge, that's connects Washington and Oregon, the Newburgh Beacon Bridge, that's in New York, Robert C. Byrd Bridge, that's West Virginia and Ohio, and the Sherman Minton Bridge, that connects Kentucky and Indiana. And there is one other picture on the front page of the Times, and the caption says, "A member of Ukraine's 17th Tank Brigade near the front line in the Donbas region in January." And there's a picture of a soldier, and he's in a tank. And it's, as I said here, he's in line in the Donbas region in January. That's the only other picture on the front page of the Times. Over to the Current, and we will have a story on this. It's made the news. You may have heard this on the TV or the radio, but the Canadian geese in Bristol, there seems to be a problem, and right, which I'll read about, but the picture is just a picture of the geese walking around the pond and walkways at Veterans Memorial Park in Bristol. And that picture was taken on Tuesday. Then one other picture on the front page of the Current, picture of former President Donald Trump awaiting the start of proceedings Tuesday in the New York courtroom on his hush money trial. That's going to be, I believe it's taking a day off today, and they'll be resumed tomorrow. I think they picked seven jurors already. We'll have that article for you. So I'm going to go into the article from the Times about the bridges. The Lewis and Clark Bridge has towered above the Columbia River for nearly a century, its rugged half-mile truss serving as a gateway for logging trucks and beach vacationers crossing between Oregon and Washington. Decades ago, to protect against wayward vessels that could threaten the structure, crews installed timber shields around the bridge piers that rise up out of the water. But even as the cargo ships chugging up the Pacific Northwest's largest river began to grow in size, the timbers rotted away, leaving the bridge vulnerable to disaster. "If a ship hits one of those piers, it's gone," said Jerry Rieger, a semi-retired contractor who lives near the bridge and has spent years pressing transportation officials to install new protections. "The state views the risk of calamity as low and the cost of preventing it to be high." Bridges across the country carry similar deficiencies. At 309 major bridges on navigable waters in the United States, inspections in recent years have found protection systems around bridge foundations that were deteriorating, potentially outdated or non-existent, leaving the structures perilously exposed to ship strikes. A New York Times analyst of federal data and shipping traffic found dozens of these vulnerable bridges spanning waterways that serve as corridors for large vessels around places like Boston, New Orleans, and Philadelphia. The review identified 193 bridges that each carry 10,000 vehicles or more a day that have no protections installed around the piers planted in the river and seabeds that hold up the bridges. The potential risk became starkly apparent last month when a cargo vessel appeared to lose power and struck a pier at the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore, causing much of the 1.6-mile structure to collapse into the water and killing six people. But the Times showed that bridges across the country have suffered similar catastrophic failures in recent decades in places like St. Petersburg, Florida, Mobile, Alabama, South Padre Island, Texas, and Weber's Falls, Oklahoma. Those costly and sometimes deadly disasters have brought calls to enhance bridge protections. The Biden administration in 2021 pushed through legislation that will provide $40 billion to repair or replace bridges across the country. But the repairs are targeted at only about a third of an estimated 43,000 bridges deemed to be in poor condition. And states have struggled to pay for multi-million dollar safety improvements, constantly balancing the costs against what may be seen as an isolated risk of disaster. Department of Transportation officials in Washington State have said they will be watching the Baltimore investigation to determine whether new pier protections on the Lewis and Clark Bridge might be needed, but caution that the state has limited funds. This would be an improvement project that would cost tens of millions of dollars, said Kelly Hanahan, a department spokeswoman. Some states have focused less on upgrading their bridges and instead are working on plans to evacuate them quickly in the event of a ship strike or other problem. Some are concentrating on improving navigation and tugboat protocols to lessen the likelihood of collisions. Others are rolling the dice. Vulnerable bridges are standing in some of the busiest shipping waterways. One example, the Crescent City Connection in New Orleans. The bridge has two spans, one built in 1958 and another in 1988. Both were completed before the adoption of more modern standards to mitigate the risk of a large vessel collision. A pair of private engineering researchers started looking at the bridge and two others nearby in the 1990s after a series of vessel accidents, including some involving ships that lost power, as was most likely the case with the ship in Baltimore. In findings published for their peers, they found that the protection system around the bridges, quote, do not have the strength and energy absorption capacity to affect the consequences of major vessel collisions, unquote, and that the bridge's foundations might not survive a head-on collision. The Times analysis found bridges with similar documented flaws at a variety of other big ports. In Florida, where the Dolphin Expressway carries more than 50,000 vehicles per day across the Miami River, the bridge supports are protected by what inspectors have described as a deteriorating system. The transportation agency managing the bridge said it is working to replace the protection system. And we'll stop that article there. We're going to go on to the current. I have the story about the geese in Bristol. Local and national animal rights groups are working to block a proposed geese management plan in Bristol that would authorize the roundup and killing of geese at Veterans Memorial Park and other city-owned properties. Bristol officials said more aggressive tactics are necessary to address a hazardous geese population they say is grown out of control, littering walkways and grassy areas with excrement. Animal advocates criticize the lethal methods outlined in the proposal, describing the strategies as inhumane and ineffective when cleanup options are available. The Bristol Board of Park Commissioners will vote Wednesday on whether or not to forward the geese management plan to the Connecticut Department of Energy and Environmental Protection for final approval. Bristol's Department of Parks, Recreation, Youth, and Community Services said the city has expended more than $15,000 on non-lethal management efforts since 2017. While the department said these methods, quote, yielded temporary results, unquote, ultimately the geese population has not decreased. The proposal would authorize the department to enter into a one-year, $3,365 $1 agreement with USDA Wildlife Services to manage the geese populations at Veterans Memorial Boulevard Park, Pine Lake Park, Malone's Pond, and other city-owned properties through lethal and non-lethal methods. "We're not trying to eliminate all the geese. We're just trying to control the population," said Mayor Jeffrey Caggiano, the chair of the board. "This is not a population that is in danger. This is not a population that is on the decline." Caggiano said the city began exploring new mitigation strategies months ago when members of the Bristol Veterans Council asked local officials to step it up and do something different about the geese poop at the park, which honors the lives and sacrifice of servicemen and women. Priscilla Farrell, the president of Friends of Animals, said that if droppings are the problem, the conversation should be about cleanup, not killing. Farrell explained that goose roundups occur when flocks experience a flightless molting period between mid-June and mid-August after their eggs hatch. According to DEEP, the process involves herding geese into portable nets and then euthanizing the birds off-site. They're going to physically assault parents, their goslings, and then gas them with nitrous oxide and call it a goose management plan, Farrell said. "I think it's obscene, and I hope the DEEP will agree." Farrell said the proposal would put Bristol on the path of a killing treadmill as new flocks settle in the location where deceased birds once nested. "Nature abhors a vacuum," Farrell said. "It's going to be repeated year after year, because when you remove one flock of geese, it invites other geese to occupy that area." Farrell said that in order to stop geese from coming to the pond, Bristol must make the environment less accommodating. Farrell explained that geese prefer golf course-type habitats with wide-open areas that allow flocks to easily spot predators. "Until the city modifies the landscape," Farrell said, "Bristol should clean up after the birds. I think the best thing they can do is invest in the lawn sweeping equipment," Farrell said. "They're treating native wildlife as though it's snow removal," Farrell said. "Friends of Animals finds it deeply offensive, and we really think there is a remedy, and that's to clean up after geese in the park." And we're going to go to the front page again, the story about the hush money trial in New York of Donald Trump. The first seven jurors for Donald Trump's hush money trial were chosen Tuesday after lawyers grilled members of the jury pool about their social media posts, political views, and personal lives to decide whether they can sit in fair judgment of the former president. The panelists, who were sworn in, are an IT worker, an English teacher, an oncology nurse, a sales professional, a software engineer, and two lawyers. 11 more people still must be picked before opening statements begin as early as next week in the Manhattan case accusing the Republican falsifying business records to cover up a sex scandal during his 2016 campaign. The trial, which began Monday, puts Trump's legal problems at the center of his closely contested race against President Joe Biden. It's the first of Trump's four criminal cases to go to trial, and it may be the only one to reach a verdict before voters decide in November whether to elect the presumptive GOP presidential nominee. On the second day of jury selection, New Yorkers were quizzed for hours about their views on Trump and other issues. 8 were excused after saying they could not be impartial or because they had other commitments. Trump's lawyers challenged a handful of people over social media posts, and one person was dismissed over a 2017 post about Trump that said, "Lock him up." Several would-be jurors told the judge they believe they could decide the case fairly, no matter their feelings about Trump or his policies as president. Trump looked on in the courtroom as his lawyers urged the judge to remove one potential juror for a social media post she made after his 2020 election loss. The judge admonished Trump at one point after he spoke loudly and gestured while the judge questioned the woman about her post. "I don't know what he was uttering, but it was audible, and he was gesturing, and he was speaking in the direction of the juror," Judge Juan Merchant said. "I won't tolerate that. I will not tolerate any jurors being intimidated in this courtroom." Prosecutor Joshua Steinglass took Trump's notoriety head on, telling would-be jurors that attorneys were not looking for people who had been living under a rock for this past 8 years. They just need to keep an open mind. This case has nothing to do with your personal politics. It's not a referendum on the Trump presidency or a popularity contest or who you're going to vote for in November. We don't care. This case is about whether the man broke the law, he said.